guys. Boy, all prisoners having been before the army, the United States Court of Appeal for Veterans Claims, draw nigh and give your attention, for this court is now in session. I say the United States of this honorable court, may it be so.
Good afternoon, I'm Judge Castle, to my right is Judge Mormon, my left is Judge Lance. We are here today in the matter of Johnny Mangum, docket number 071338. Would counsel for the parties please note your appearance for the record? Please stand.
Douglas Brzezinski for the appellant, John Mangum.
Thank you.
Good morning, Rebecca Beer for the secretary, with me is Edward Cassidy.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of the time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I reserve 10 minutes.
You have it. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. The board erred in this case not resolving the fundamental issue of how you can have a medical quality assurance record protected by statute from release without there being an underlying medical treatment issue involved in that report. In this case, there's no evidence that the medical QA record met either the statute or, more importantly, the secretary's own regulations for protecting that report.
What do you believe that report is going to say?
That report could easily say that the event in question affected the treatment of people under the domiciliary program. It could also say that the cause of the event was a breakdown in VA security. It could also say that another cause, that the event was either foreseeable or unforeseeable because of issues around the security of domiciliaries and other VA facilities. It could say a number of things.
Mr. Mangum wasn't receiving treatment at the time of this incident, was he?
Your Honor, I believe he was, and if you'll let me explain.
Please.
The VA itself, on its website, entitles the domiciliary project or function as a domiciliary residential care and treatment. If you will follow the sequence of definitions in statute 1701, number 7 defines domiciliary care as including medical services. If you go to definition number 6 in 1701, it defines medical services as including treatment.
Well, let me ask you this. If Mr. Mangum or any veteran is in a VA hospital and he's sitting in the cafeteria, is he receiving medical treatment or medical care?
No, Your Honor, but domiciliary...
Well, how's that different from domiciliary care where you're sitting in a cafeteria?
If you look at the title itself, residential treatment, it is a broader type of treatment. In a hospital, you're undergoing procedures. One of the functions of the domiciliary program is that people are in a, in quote, safe, secure environment. That is one of the aspects of the treatment that VA itself says is why you're in domiciliary care. In this particular case, Mr. Mangum and many of the others, if you read the record, suffered from social interaction problems, trust problems, issues. That's why they were homeless in many of them. That's why they were in this type of care.
But doesn't 1151, as it now reads, require direct causation with regard to the injury suffered by the veteran?
It requires, I believe, proximate causation, which, again, we're guessing at what is in this report. And I would say that the report could say a number of things, including that the impact on the treatment of all these individuals, Mr. Mangum in particular, was affected by the breakdown and was caused by the ability of one individual to bring a gun in. And if you...
The statute actually uses causation twice. Am I correct? It says first
that the death or disability was caused by hospital care, medical or surgical treatment, and then the proximate cause of the disability was carelessness, negligence, an act not foreseeable, etc. So it really uses cause twice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and I'm focusing on the first causation, caused by medical care. And I think what you're saying to me is that unlike Loving, if a grate had fallen on Mr. Mangum in a domiciliary facility, that there would be causation and 1151 would apply. Whereas in Loving, a man who is in active examination in a VA hospital had a grate fall on him, and this court said that 1151 did not apply.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe we need to go in that direction. What I'm saying is domiciliary treatment itself involves a safe, secure environment, safe and secure from exactly these types of things, violence, untrustworthy individuals, and other psychological treatments. If a grate fell in the cafeteria, it is not going to, it would appear to me, a non-medical type, to affect Mr. Mangum to have nightmares that a grate's going to fall on him. That's not reasonable. But that someone came in with a gun, just like they would anywhere else, and shot people in front of him, that is part of the reason that he is there, to try to reestablish these social interactions with these people. Again, going back to the VA website discussion of the domiciliary care and treatment, it says all people in the domiciliary are part of the treatment.
Can I take you to 1151?
Yes, sir.
A1. Accepting everything you said, how is anything that you said, how does anything that you said fall within either hospital care, medical or surgical treatment, as opposed to treatment or examination?
Your Honor, I believe medical.
He's in the mess room on his own having lunch.
I believe medical qualifies treatment, or else medical makes no sense.
So I agree.
Medical,
so what
treatment,
medical treatment? Let's go.
And medical treatment itself is not defined in statute. However, medical services are defined, and that includes treatment.
And you don't think that treatment in 1701.6 is also modified by medical, which says medical examination, comma, treatment, and rehabilitative services?
I believe domiciliary care includes medical services.
That's correct.
Right. And definition.
Medical services includes medical examination
and treatment. Treatment. Broader than.
Broad treatment.
Broader than just medical, or they would have said medical. So
having accepting that, just for argument's sake, how do you get that to be medical treatment?
I'm not following you. There's medical services.
Medical services includes medical examination. It includes treatment, which you're telling me now is not medical treatment. So I take you back to 1151. How do you say it is medical treatment?
Well, medical treatment is a subset of treatment. You can have.
That's right. And 1151 says it has to be medical treatment.
If he has a medical condition, whether it's physical or mental, that is medical treatment of a condition. He has a psychological.
It might be treatment. You just told me that, I'm just going by your own words, domiciliary care includes medical services. Medical services include medical examination, something broader known as treatment is the way you described it. And I'm asking you, how does that treatment fall within medical treatment? And you just said it was a subset, and I'm agreeing with you.
The way I read it, Your Honor, is that medical treatment and treatment within the various definitions, that psychological services in the domiciliary are included under the definition, both of those definitions.
So you're saying that having lunch in a cafeteria is medical treatment?
Domiciliary care and treatment by its own discussion.
Is it treatment or medical treatment? I'm still confused.
It's both.
All right, so you're saying that having lunch, I just want to get straight, having lunch in a cafeteria on your own is medical treatment.
He wasn't on his own. He was interacting with the others in a social environment. And again, we are guessing all of this. This, if indeed the secretary is correct in trying to, in the QA, medical QA.
I asked you earlier, what do you expected the QA to establish? I don't recall you saying it would establish in any way, shape, or form that your client was receiving hospital care, medical or surgical treatment, or examination. Oh,
well, maybe I misspoke, Your Honor. I believe it is very possible that it will define the domiciliary treatment because it has to talk about some medical treatment. It's certainly not first aid for Mr. Mangum. If it was first
aid... On what basis? Take me through this then. Why would a root analysis cause of an individual who goes Looney Tunes or has a problem, why would that discuss your client's situation prior to this individual incident?
It could very easily, and again, I believe the issue is why are we guessing what it says?
No, the issue is why would you even think there would be anything reasonably related to what it is you're seeking?
If it is truly a root cause...
Root cause as to somebody else and why they did something. You're sitting here telling this court that you think it will somehow examine your client and why he was sitting in the mess hall?
No, Your Honor. It could fill in the definitions that we're struggling with.
We have statutory definitions. You've just told me about the statutory definitions. You think some root cause analysis is going to be an explanation of the Secretary's interpretation of this stuff?
Your Honor, if it's a root cause analysis, it's not protected, and we don't have to guess. The board...
If it's a root cause analysis of why this individual did something, and you had a reason to get why this individual did something, if you could show that your client was in hospital care, medical, or surgical treatment, you may have a very good argument. But you first have to get to some kind of relevance, and I don't understand what relevance you see in a root cause analysis to the status of your client at the time this occurred.
It's not... Because the root cause analysis, a root cause analysis by its own definition and what root cause means is it goes back to the cause of the event.
That's right, the cause of why this third party individual came and did something.
And you have to define the terms around what the cause of what and the impact of what.
Well, the impact might be important, but we aren't yet at the impact unless you fall under 1151. And you don't get under 1151 given anything you've told us today. Because you haven't established hospital care, medical, surgical treatment, or examination.
I believe we have established treatment. The title of the program is Domiciliary Residential Care and Treatment.
Nowhere does it say medical treatment, which is a subset, as you self-described.
I believe I clarified that treatment and medical treatment both apply, on my argument, to... psychological treatment that was being given, the whole reason he was there is covered by both treatment and medical treatment. And it is a factual issue of whether he meets 1151.
So am I correct then that your argument is anything that happens in domiciliary care is by definition happening during medical care?
Anything that affects the treatment that occurs during...
Well, what affects the treatment of your of the appellant in this case, in this shooting incident that occurred?
It tore asunder the basic fundamental protection of a safe, secure environment. It's undisputed that he did suffer and continues to suffer some mental issues from that.
Unquestionably.
So
why wouldn't his remedy be in the Federal Tort Claims Act, for instance?
It might be an alternative remedy or an additional remedy. That does not mean it is not also an 1151 remedy.
But isn't everything in 1151 aimed at, essentially, service connection for medical malpractice? Isn't that what 1151 is all about?
That is one of the major purposes for 1151. But it is also... there can be malpractice, if you will, at an administrative level. You go into the operating room and all the tools are unclean, but they're in bags, and the guy uses them, and he finds out that they didn't do it in the back room.
But that's because there was a treatment effect from what wasn't done. A person who was actively being treated suffered damage as a result of negligence.
If you're in a hotel, perhaps an example, if you're in a hotel and someone walks in the front door carrying an AK-47 and goes upstairs and shoots somebody, I would argue that the people downstairs who saw him, who worked for the hotel and didn't do anything about it, violated a duty.
Absolutely. And that's what tort claims are all about.
He
may have a claim under the Federal Tort Claims Act.
But he was there for a safe, secure environment, which was part of the treatment. Their own language on their website, which is the only definitional description of the program we have, says that is all the people involved are part of the treatment.
Counselor, I'm getting the distinct impression that you're of the opinion that 1151 covers all potential torts.
No, Your Honor.
And I heard the term used, negligence, that maybe this root cause analysis shows that there was some negligence on someone's part at some point.
Yeah, it very well could, Your Honor.
All right. Well, let's see. Your client has a remedy with the Federal Tort Claims Act, if that is true. Is that correct?
I have not looked into the Federal Tort Claim Act for this case.
And if you want to see the root cause analysis, I would suggest you take a look at 5 U.S.C. 552A and the exclusive jurisdiction given to federal district courts relative to making determinations along those lines.
Yes, Your Honor, but respectfully, the issue here is 1151. It's not whether he should have filed in another jurisdiction.
You're the gentleman that talked about negligence now. That's a whole different kettle of fish, and we're talking about people running into the hotel with guns and somebody should have stopped them. Doesn't that sound in negligence versus 1151?
No, Your Honor. I mean, 1151, I believe, covers that. I mean, if the doctor cuts off the wrong leg or operates on the wrong organ,
wow,
it's the
medical
same
treatment.
I think my position is it would be a very big surprise to people who run the domiciliary program that what they give is not treatment. And I would again return to the issue of we're guessing what's in that report. There is a specific set of evidence that is required to protect the privilege of that report. There is none of that evidence in the record, and it was raised by Mr. Jarvie before the regional office. The record at 374 asked the same question. How can you say it's a medical quality assurance record if you're saying the guy wasn't undergoing treatment at the time?
And he got a final decision from VA on the FOIA request and to date, apparently, has not filed in the federal district court to challenge that determination as a FOIA disposition. Am I correct?
Yes, Your Honor. But FOIA here is a complete issue that doesn't need to be here. It's a red herring. FOIA says that if 5705 is met, that the secretary can exempt under a FOIA request. 5705 explicitly says you can only exempt it if you go back to 17500 through 511. And 501 gives you three specific requirements, all involving written requirements that it's a specific medical review, that there has to be pre-existing written authority that this will be protected, and it has to contain certain information or certain documents. That's all documents that the general counsel should have provided and the board should have requested. The FOIA issue goes completely away. If you've got the documents, you're protected under FOIA. If you don't have the documents, it all unzips and the record needs to be provided. This issue, all the guessing, and I would submit that the court is not one to guess what's in the report. It's simple enough to go back and tell the board it is not enough that the general counsel indicated, that's its words, in its decision, I believe on page 5, that the general counsel indicated that this was protected. That is an error. There is a specific evidentiary test of whether it is protected. Release the report or stand by it and prove it is a medical report, then they've already conceded the guy has some PTSD or other issue.
Assuming your argument that treatment is medical treatment, let's accept that just for discussion purposes. As I understand your position, what you're saying is he was receiving treatment, which you define as medical treatment, and he falls under 1151.1. And as part of that big program, even though he's in lunch, et cetera, and this is part of his medical treatment, the department was either A, careless, and you believe this root cause analysis might show that with regard to this other person and how they let him go, et cetera, and they ought to be liable for the proximate responsibility, and negligence does have a place under 1A.
Yes, sir.
You also, I assume, would argue that it could be an event not reasonably foreseeable, which wouldn't even require negligence.
Absolutely. And there's all sorts of evidence in the record.
And I assume you would argue that under 5705, confidentiality of medical quality assurance records, there's an exception that says nothing in this section shall be construed as authority to withhold documents from within the department.
Absolutely.
So you would say it should be available to the regional office and the board, assuming there's any degree of relevance, which we accept for purposes of the discussion. And therefore, this is a, and you would also, I assume, turn to 5103 big A, which talks about the secretary's duty to assist in getting records under C, any other relevant record held by a fellow department.
Yes, Your Honor, the duty
and you
is
would say that that is separate and distinct from the FOIA regulation.
Absolutely. There is no
We have your argument. We understand it. I can tell you, I'm having a hard time understanding hospital care, medical or surgical treatment or examination.
I understand, Your Honor, but I would submit that if there's any doubt here, it goes to the veteran and let the facts. Why are we compelled, or why should you be compelled, as I'm sure the Secretary would say, to close this out, to guess and to say, no, there's no way. We don't know what's in there, but we're...
Yeah, but you haven't even given an indication that the root cause analysis could have anything to do with his status with regard to the care he was receiving.
And that should have been what the board said, not that the general counsel indicated, and that's good enough for us. If the board had said, we've seen this...
Somewhere the document that you're trying to seek has to have some indicia of relevance.
It's about the event that he...
Well, if you could get and establish an 1151 status, you might have an argument that negligence, et cetera, and we might get to that issue.
Again, Your Honor, we believe there's at least some reason to believe there's information in that report. No one has said there isn't any because they haven't looked at it. If someone had looked at it and wants to go
on...
But
you give no basis for your reasoning. I mean, it's almost like saying the construction documents for this building might say something.
No, Your Honor. This is a QA, medical QA record about an event that they claim is a root cause analysis.
About an event caused by a person other than your client. What caused him to do it? Were they negligent with regard to that? Was their care proper with regard to that? Did they do everything proper with regard to that? I don't see anything that says, oh, and by the way, your client was sitting in the cafeteria having lunch in a domiciliary program which provides treatment, which we believe is also medical treatment under 1151. I don't see how you get there.
I believe I've explained that as best I can, Your Honor.
I think
but
you're
I'd
right.
also say that your reading of what's in the report may be reasonable. But mine is not unreasonable, and that's the standard.
Thank you very much. Are we out of time? We're out of time, but if you want to ask a question.
Let me just ask one more question.
We'll add a minute.
With regard to the Secretary's regulation 17.30B, that says domiciliary care. The term domiciliary care means the furnishing of a home to a veteran, embracing the furnishing of shelter, food, clothing, and other comforts of home, including necessary medical services. Now, that doesn't say the furnishing of domiciliary care is medical services, does it?
No, but it includes medical services. And I would
but
argue.
But that's like saying that because going into the VA hospital includes medical services, that once you walk in the front door, you're receiving treatment, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. I think you need to take the entire definition as you read. It includes living there. It includes
right.
all those other things. So all those other things are part of domiciliary care, which are not part of hospital care. Hospital care is defined also in 5. So it's in addition to, I would say. It's a broader, our argument is a broader definition. And the benefit of the doubt, again.
But isn't that your problem? 1151 is a narrower definition. It says hospital care. It says medical services. It says medical treatment.
And the domiciliary care definition also
includes, can include. Okay.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, the Secretary respectfully contends that the appellant has not established entitlement to 1151 in this case. Further, the Secretary contends that the appellant cannot establish entitlement to benefits under 38 U.S.C. 1151 in this case. 1151 provides for compensation where VA medical treatment has caused an injury or disability to a veteran. As Judge Mormon noted, in this case, we're concerned with domiciliary care, which is defined at 38 CFR 17.30B. Domiciliary care embraces furnishing of a home to a veteran, including food, clothing, shelter, and other comforts of home, including necessary medical services. Medical services is defined to include medical treatment. Medical treatment is the management and care of a patient for the purpose of combating disease or disorder. That's the common definition.
What about the argument that the domiciliary environment is a treatment environment, and that therefore, by definition, when you go into domiciliary care, you're getting medical treatment 24/7?
That's just not a viable interpretation of medical treatment under 1151. The Federal Circuit in Jackson v. Principi specifically spoke to what it means to be involved with VA medical treatment after Congress changed 1151 in 1997. In Jackson v. Principi, the Federal Circuit said that medical treatment involves direct involvement with VA staff. In this case, Mr. Mangum was eating lunch in the dining hall in the domiciliary. There was no involvement with VA staff at all at the time that his injury was incurred.
But I think what the argument is of the appellant is that domiciliary care is different, and that Jackson didn't discuss care in a domiciliary facility. And I think the argument is, in a domiciliary setting, everything is geared toward treatment because the whole environment involves treating patients who have serious problems that require social interaction, that require eating together in a cafeteria, that require sleeping in a dormitory situation, that have an active interchange, and that somehow is all part of treatment. How do you argue against that?
I'm not aware of any requirement that a person who wants to be admitted to a VA domiciliary has to be in need of some social rehabilitation. I'm not certain of the source of that. But I would say perhaps under the prior version of 1151, where the statute was concerned more with status as opposed to actual involvement, some kind of contact and interaction between VA staff and the claimant. That's the current version of 1151. The appellant is trying to make domiciliary status much like hospitalization status, which is what was at issue in Jackson. In Jackson, which was the prior version of 1151, the Federal Circuit said, your statute says hospitalization. You're talking about status. You're in the building. That's all it takes. But the statute was amended. It no longer says hospitalization. It doesn't refer to someone being in a VA.
But it does say hospital care.
It does, in hospital.
And hospital care, I believe, is defined.
It is, Your Honor.
Does hospital care, you're a patient, you're in the hospital, you're admitted, you're inpatient, and you've received all your medications, and you've got to stay in the hospital for 3 days. Are you receiving care when you're lying in the bed?
Yes, Your Honor, you are.
Are you receiving care when you use your room for bathroom facilities?
1701 defines hospital care as medical services rendered in the course of hospitalization. So we're still going back to medical services rendered in the course of hospitalization. So I'm not certain that using a facility while you're in the hospital.
But why is lying in bed?
I'm sorry.
Why? You said lying in bed was. I'm inpatient. I'm lying in bed. You said that.
I apologize. I was assuming you meant you were confined to bed. if you're confined to bed in a hospital environment, then you may be receiving.
Well, you have to stay for 3 days in the hospital, but you can get up and go to the bathroom, for example. So, I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by confined. He's not strapped down, right? They have a bed. They have to stay in the hospital for 3 days. They even have an IV.
I would say that if you have an IV and you're in a hospital bed, you're probably receiving medical treatment.
But if you get up to go to the bathroom, you're not?
I don't know, Your Honor, but I know that's not the case here.
I understand. We're just trying to understand the scope of things.
Even if the court were to ignore the Federal Circuit's guidance in Jackson and this court's holding in Schweitzer and find that just being in a domiciliary constitutes VA medical treatment, the appellant's case still lacks causation. The facts show that a third party, Marshall Dunham, came into a VA facility and shot 3 residents. There's no causation on the part of VA under those facts.
But what about his argument that the root cause analysis might show that there was a degree of carelessness associated with that individual and the care they provided him and letting him in the building to begin with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Or what about 1151A big P, an event not reasonably foreseeable, which doesn't even require negligence?
Either of those is a tort claim, Your Honor.
True, but they're also 1151. I mean, I don't think you can distinguish 1151 from a tort claim simply because there's a tort. 1151 clearly covers torts.
Correct.
It clearly covers the negligence of the obvious ones are a doctor cutting off the wrong leg. And what we're discussing is how far out it goes. And the hospital care, we've had this discussion, we're not sure just how far it goes. Is it a person who walks into a hospital, as was discussed before? Is it a person who's in a hospital receiving care but gets up and uses the facilities or goes down to the cafeteria? We're not sure. And then domiciliary care. Is the treatment so broad, et cetera, that that falls under medical or surgical treatment? I mean, those are the discussions that we're having in that regard. But I don't know how that means there's no causation, per se, and that gets into the argument that if you get by 1151, it seems to me, we get into the second argument. Because even if without causation, you have not reason, well, you may not need it if it's not reasonably foreseeable, I suppose.
The causation element is that it's the appellant's burden to show that VA treatment caused his injury. The court held that in Roberson.
But if treatment includes, as we just discussed, in the hospitalization sense, if the treatment included taking your IV and walking to the bathroom, or treatment included taking your IV in the elevator, and the elevator goes kaput, are you receiving treatment at the time? I don't know. Or you go down to the cafeteria and somebody comes in and shoots everybody up.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I heard you refer to hospitalization again.
I did.
1151 no longer refers to hospitalization. It refers to hospital care.
I agree. Hospital care. I misstated.
And hospital care is medical treatment provided in a hospital. We're not dealing with a hospital here, but we'll...
But you're still left with a definition that is totally, it is somewhat unclear with regard to the individual who's an IV lying in his bed, which you indicated might be medical care, but when he gets up, maybe isn't. And I mean, you know, those are some fine lines. And you're right, we don't have that example. But.
Right. I would come back to the definition of medical treatment as being the provision of management and care to a person for the purpose of combating disease or injury. In this case, the appellant was eating lunch. There was no care being provided.
Where do you get that medical treatment definition?
That's in Dorland's 28th edition,
okay.
1736.
Counselor, maybe you can explain to us why these root cause analysis isn't subject to a duty to assist in this matter.
Yes, Your Honor. The board approached that on two different fronts. The first was that there has to be a reasonable possibility that any assistance would aid the appellant in substantiating his claim. In this case, as I've been arguing previously, there is no way to establish that VA treatment caused the appellant's PTSD or anxiety reaction. That injury was caused by a third party. The appellant seems to think that the RCA is a panacea that's going to somehow fill the gap in his claim, and it isn't. There's no way to fill the gap in this claim. There's no way that he can show that VA's treatment of him, Mr. Mangum, caused his PTSD. So For that reason, the board properly concluded that there was no reasonable possibility that any further development at all, the RCA or any development, would aid in substantiating his claim. The second issue is that the secretary only has to make reasonable efforts under the duty to assist under 5103A. In this case, the board found that because the regional council and then the general council both concluded that the RCA was a quality assurance record under 5705.
What about 5103, big A, little c, subset 3?
Obtaining records for compensation claims, Your Honor?
Yeah. I don't think it says reasonable effort. I think it says shall include obtaining the following documents, any other relevant record held by any federal department.
I'm referring to 5103 big A, then little a.
I know that, but I referred you to 5103 big A, little c. It doesn't apply because it's not a compensation claim?
No, this is a compensation claim.
Okay, then C would apply. C is narrower than A, isn't it?
C under the last paragraph still refers to obtaining the following records if they're relevant to the claim.
Correct.
In this case, the secretary would contend that the appellant has not established the relevance of the RCA. Okay. He attached to his brief the case of Bethel v. Derwinski, which dealt with the disclosure of an RCA. In that case, the federal district court spoke of the VHA directive that defines what an RCA is, and it pertains to an adverse clinical event based on the treatment of another person. So the appellant has not established how this RCA pertains to his claim.
Right. I thought you were going off on reasonable efforts, which is in little a as a second criterion.
Counselor, can we backtrack about 4 minutes and finish your answer to my question, please?
Sorry, I was speaking about the board's decision and why they found that it would not be reasonable for the secretary to violate 5705 to comply with 5103A, even if the appellant had established that a relevant document should have been obtained. So those were the two bases for the board's decision not to apply the BCAA to this case. The first, that there was no reasonable possibility of substantiation. The second, that it wouldn't be reasonable for the secretary to violate 5705 to comply with 5103.
Thank you.
How would you violate 5705?
5705 provides that medical quality assurance records are not to be disclosed. They are privileged. It provides.
What about subset A, B, little 5? Couldn't they show it to the regional office or the board?
Under the secretary's regulations 38 CFR 17.508, the secretary's staff, even the general counsel's office, can only see the RCA if they need to know what's in the RCA. In this case, there was no reasonable possibility that the RCA pertains to the treatment of Mr. Mangum. Therefore, the board didn't need to
know. Because it wasn't relevant.
Correct.
Got it. So everything revolves around the relevance.
I wouldn't say everything revolves around relevance. VA certainly has a statutory right under 5705 to protect its quality assurance records.
But not from the board.
If it was needed.
If it was relevant.
Correct.
Got it.
Counsel, would you please point me to everything that I should look at that will persuade me that domiciliary care is not, by definition, medical treatment?
I would refer, Your Honor, to 1730B. Which defines domiciliary care as the furnishing of a home to a veteran, embracing shelter, food, clothing, and other comforts of home, including necessary medical services. So, by definition, medical services is a subset of the things that VA will furnish to a domiciliary resident.
Is there anything else that I should look at with regard to domiciliary care and how that is defined by VA?
The only definition I'm aware of is 17.30B.
Okay.
If I might step back just a moment, back to the elements of an 1151 claim. It's the Secretary's contention that the appellant has not established how he was undergoing VA treatment at the time of his injury. He also has not established how any purported VA treatment caused his PTSD or anxiety reaction.
Well, his position, taking treatment broadly, is that he was in a program of protection. Now, whether that's medical treatment, I think, is an issue.
The Secretary would agree with you, Your Honor. Under Jackson, and since the change in the language of 1151A, hospitalization or mere status as a domiciliary resident is no longer sufficient to bring this claim within the ambit of 1151.
Is there anything in the legislative history concerning 1151 that you have found that would guide the court with regard to what the intent was of the changes that were made to 1151?
I didn't brief the legislative history of 1151 in the brief that was previously right. submitted, but I did refer to the Jackson case. So in Jackson v. Nicholson, the Federal Circuit actually addressed the legislative history of 1151 and found that in 1997, Congress amended the statute and changed the word hospitalization to hospital care. Reasonably inferred from that amendment is that Congress understood the earlier version of 1151 to mean something more than hospital care. When it used hospitalization, hospital care implies some interaction between VA staff and the patient, and that element is missing in this case. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, the Secretary contends that the appellant has failed to establish entitlement under 1151 and that he hasn't demonstrated how he was undergoing medical treatment. And even if the court were to ignore Jackson, Loving, and Schweitzer, he hasn't demonstrated how his mere status as a VA domiciliary resident caused his injury.
Just to let you know, we certainly wouldn't ignore the cases. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 10 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor. And just for the record, we're not asking you to ignore any of the cases. We would suggest that none of the cases address domiciliary care, and that would be an important point for the court to address in this case. A few points on rebuttal. Involvement with the staff, and you know, again, to our security theory, which we believe has merit, that they're there all the time. They're interacting all the time. That's why those guys aren't supposed to be able to get out and get in whenever they want, carrying whatever they want, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or guns. That's what.
Is he prevented from leaving?
Yes, I believe you have, my understanding is you have to sign in and out, and of course you're subject to search and the rest of that.
Can you sign out? I mean, you can leave?
I do not know.
You have no reason to believe they can't leave?
I know that the individual who did the shooting did leave to go to the gun range. Again, another indication that there may be some liability or negligence on part of VA because he was allowed to go to a gun range while under treatment or care or whatever domiciliary residential issues are.
My understanding of domiciliary care is they're there voluntarily and they're providing a home for you. If you want to get up and leave, you can leave. Do you have a different understanding?
My understanding is that there are requirements to sign in and out while you're there, while you're undergoing.
So what if you signed out and left? Is that okay?
I,
is this like a cadet?
That's the total sum of my knowledge. I do not know the answer to your question.
Do you have any reason to believe that they could be held against their will at this domiciliary?
I do not know.
Okay.
I will respond to the lying in bed line of questioning. I see no difference in lying in bed, waiting whatever treatment or undergoing whatever treatment you're getting in an IV as eating in the cafeteria, undergoing whatever treatment or awaiting whatever treatment that is scheduled for you during the next period of time. The Dorland's definition is one that I also had planned to discuss. It is in more full. It says a treatment is the management and care of a patient. And my the
just out of curiosity, is that a medical treatment or just a treatment?
It is only treatment. That's the undefined term from the statute. So that's why we all both went to Dorland's. Also in the Jackson case, just to be sure, Jackson v. U.S. actually, 433 F. 3rd, 822, Jackson v. Nicholson, is that they say the term hospital care, again, not domiciliary care, but hospital care, implies the provision of care by the hospital. That's all. So if you want to just straight substitute words, it's provision of care by the domiciliary. And again, we're back to this.
How would that help you? I'm sorry. 1151 doesn't say care. Doesn't say treatment. It says medical
service.
Treatment.
Yes, well.
It doesn't say medical services.
All the definitions need to be fit together. And our contention is if you follow the trail through all those definitions, the care, treatment, services point to the possibility that that Mr. Mangum was undergoing treatment and that the sequence of events that happened caused him during treatment this additional injury. And it's hard to do it here piecing together.
Can you point us to the record somewhere where it shows that Mr. Mangum was receiving medical treatment while in domiciliary care?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe the record has. One of the reasons we're all going to these definitions is there is nothing in the record about what was going on in the domiciliary. At least my review of it jumps over.
Well, I think the record's pretty clear that he was going to lunch.
Yes, he was at
lunch. So he wasn't being operated on.
That's correct.
There's no even indication he was taking any medication at that time.
I believe that's correct. I don't recall anything in the record that says that, which in itself may be another issue to address on a remand.
Wouldn't Loving indicate that even if Mr. Mangum was undergoing a physical examination at the time that this incident took place, it wouldn't be covered by 1151?
I don't believe Loving addresses domiciliary care. The real issue here is what is the scope of domiciliary care and treatment? I think we've covered that here.
Let me ask you this. What do you think the reason was that Congress made the changes it did in 1151, where it substituted for the words as the result of, it substituted caused by? For hospitalization, it substituted hospital care. And for results in, it substituted proximate causation. What do you think the purpose of those specific changes to the statute was?
It was specifically to address the issues in Gardner, which addressed specifically issues in the hospital, in which cases you're having specific periods of time when you can say you're undergoing certain operations. But again, as Judge Castle just pointed out, there's gray areas here. And that is where, to apply Gardner in the further sense that is normally used, if there's a reasonable interpretation of all these words and terms that we've used, it should go to the benefit of Mr. Mangum, especially because the record is incomplete here. It is the board, not the general counsel or the secretary, who's supposed to make the decision that this record or this document or record is not relevant, or even the regional office. They did not do that. They said the general counsel said it's protected. No one has talked about relevance. They specifically have cited 5705, which got us all in this tailspin about FOIA. There's nothing in the record, and those are the errors that we bring to you now, that if they had made those decisions, it would have been a much tougher argument to make here today. But they didn't make those determinations. They said, general counsel said.
But But you can tell that we're struggling with whether or not 1151 is even in play here.
Absolutely. We recognize
and
that.
Let me give you the same opportunity I gave counsel for VA, and that is, would you please point me to the specific things you want me to look at in determining that domiciliary care, no matter where you are within the domiciliary facility, is medical treatment all the time?
I would point you to the definitions in 1701-7 and then 1701-6 and then Dorland's at 1983 in the most recent illustrated version of treatment, and applying Gardner and applying the resulting questions you have in your mind of whether this document can help you and assist you in making a complete decision of whether those terms in this context apply. We're not talking about ceiling grates falling. We're not talking about wheelchairs. We're not talking about a hospital. We contend that to make this decision now, that there's nothing, absolutely nothing, that can be in this document without anybody looking at it.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that if this shooting had taken place in a VA hospital, that there would not have been a root cause, and it was done by a veteran, that there would not have been a root cause analysis investigation done?
I don't know, Your Honor, because I don't know what they root caused. There's been some indication here that this is all about the shooter. I don't know that. There's nothing in the record for that. What it says is, it is privilege. End of discussion. So I do not know how to answer that question.
Yeah, but you're suggesting anytime somebody comes in and says it's a root cause analysis, the regional office or the board would have to go see what that document is before it could say we don't need to take a look at it. And it seems to me, by definition, any common sense analysis of a root cause analysis is the root cause of what happened. And I'm having a hard time jumping from the root cause of what happened into the status of your client under 1151. That's where the relevance issue comes into effect. And certainly there has to be some indicia of a relevance of the document. You couldn't come in and say, I want the design plans for the Empire State Building and have the board say, well, geez, I better look at it to make sure there's nothing in there that's relevant. That's right. In effect what you're asking us. You're asking us to take something as a root cause analysis and say that it's relevant to your client's status. Now, if you want to say it's relevant once he gets status to the negligence aspect, we can have a great discussion, but it's hard jumping to the first part.
All of your questions have pointed to that this could be negligence, that there's foreseeability, there's issues here that could be addressed by this report. I understand it.
Your time is not up. About. Does anybody have a question? You want to continue?
No, that's all right.
Do you want to judge this? Case will be submitted. We'll greet counsel.
All rise. This honorable court is now adjourned to further.